This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We know Mount Adams today as a Cincinnati neighborhood with eclectic architecture, cool shops, bars, and restaurants, and terrific views of the rest of the city. A new book goes farther, all the way back to the 18th century. I spoke earlier with the author of Mount Adams, A History. Here is our pre-recorded interview. Jim Steiner, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
It's good to be with you, Michael. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, we talk a lot about local authors and their books about various parts of the city. This is probably the biggest exploration of a local neighborhood that I've talked about in my tenure as host of this program. It's a lovely, big book full of beautiful photographs and a lot of interesting information. I want to talk about how you start this book and exploring its history by referring to this as a love story. Can you tell our listeners why you characterize it that way?
Oh, I'm glad you picked up on that. It's very truly a love story. I had always wanted to live on Mount Adams, and my wife did too. And we raised a family in the suburbs. But when the kids were gone and grown, we decided it was time to move to Mount Adams. So we did, and that was 21 years ago. We wanted to move to Mount Adams because we thought it was a cool place, number one. It was had a European vibe to it, and we liked the feel of the place. And we did move in, and we soon learned that there's a lot more to Mount Adams than meets the eye. It's just a delightful community, and everybody is very supportive. They work together on projects. They love the neighborhood, and it just kind of grabs at you and continues to grow the longer you live here. And there's an old saying that I used in the book that I've heard from a number of people, and they say, you can leave Mount Adams, but Mount Adams never leaves you. And that is certainly been my experience. So hence the love story.
Well, when I think back to 21 years ago, when you say you and your wife moved to Mount Adams, I think of that era as being, I was really young, but when we could pop up to the hill there, we felt really cool. You know, like there was a completely different vibe on Mount Adams than there is in the rest of the city. How was that area able to cultivate its own personality within this big metro area?
It's actually a geographic island, if you think about it. And it's surrounded on the south by the Ohio River, on the west by the city down below, and on the north and east, it's pretty much Eden Park. So it's a geographic island. So the people that lived on the hill, they were all in the early days blue-collar working-class families, very heavily German and Irish Catholic. And they just pretty much stayed on the hill, except when they went to work and they'd ride the Mount Adams incline down to the basin to go to work. But they built churches, they built businesses, they built schools, and they all worked together to kind of begin this chemistry that still exists on the hill that started back in probably the 1830s and 1840s. And it's still here today as I speak.
I think people might have just heard you reference the incline, and the inclines that used to exist across Cincinnati are really interesting to people. They fascinate people. What was the impact that incline had in Mount Adams development, and then subsequently when it was no longer used, what was the result?
Well, the incline opened in 1876, and as soon as it did, a lot of real estate people began to bring material up on the incline, and a building boom began. And that's when, if you look back in the deed records, the 1880s is kind of when things really begin to move up here, and residences begin to be built, new houses and what have you. So the incline was responsible for that. And it continued to bring people to the hill, take people from the hill to their jobs. And it served as kind of a lifeline from Mount Adams, which, as I said, is geographically isolated, with the city down below. And that continued on until after the end of World War II, and buses began to take over, and streetcars, which were what were used on the incline, they were pulled up and let down. Streetcars began to fall out of favor, and by 1948-49, the incline was closed for, quote, repairs, and it never reopened. And after it closed, that's when Mount Adams really began to face an exodus of people, which had really begun in the Depression, but it kicked in really strong after the Second World War. People began to leave, and part of that was because of the incline closing. And eventually, Mount Adams became kind of Section 8 housing, a lot of absentee landlord owners letting buildings deteriorate and not taking care of things. And there was a real concern that Mount Adams was not going to be able to remain viable. But a lot of people with foresight saw the thing that was good about Mount Adams and began to think about a different demographic. And so in the 1960s, the gentrification of Mount Adams began in earnest and still continues today.
We're talking with Jim Steiner. He's a retired pediatric dentist who has lived in Mount Adams for more than two decades now, and he's the author of the new book, Mount Adams, A History. This book's proceeds will be donated to the Mount Adams Civic Association. Jim, you just referenced gentrification, and I'm wondering if you could take us back to the beginning of this, after the neighborhood suffered from the loss of the incline and, as you note, became a hotbed of Section 8 housing. What was the catalyst over the past 40 or 50 years to transform the neighborhood into what those of us living now recognize it as?
Well, there were a number of developers that got interested and began to buy properties. But the main developer was a company called Town Properties. And it was actually begun in 1961. And it continued to work on Mount Adams and still continues to work on Mount Adams to this very day. But they were the company that really consistently bought properties on the hill and remodeled them and then marketed them to a higher demographic, income demographic. And that's when the gentrification began to take place. And probably the tipping point between the old folks and the new folks was in the early 1970s with the construction of a project called the Cloisters, which is a condominium built on the side of a hill on telephone poles, believe it or not. And it really took off when one of the prime tenants became Johnny Bench, and he moved in there and was a member of the Hill, and people began to say, oh, look, this is a neat place to go. Let's move there. And so the Cloisters is really what was the tipping point toward actual real gentrification. And it continues, as I said, today.
Jim, I found it fascinating how connected to broader Cincinnati history is Mount Adams finds itself being. It's really curious. And because as you've just said, you know, it's sort of geographically impenetrable, and still somehow it has influenced so many of the major stories that locals can reference easily. I want to talk about how Mount Adams was originally not known that way, and at a pretty historic moment led to the change of the name. Can you take us back to Mount Ida, the observatory, and what went down?
You bet I can. In the early, late 1700s, early 1800s, there was a fort built down along the riverfront known as Fort Washington. And in that fort worked a woman who lived on a hillside east of the fort. And her name was Ida Martin. And Ida worked as a washerwoman at the fort, and lived in, legend has it, a hollow sycamore tree on the side of a hill east of the fort. So the soldiers just began to refer to the hill as Ida's Hill. And eventually that morphed into Mount Ida. And Mount Adams remained Mount Ida until a fairly significant historical event occurred in our history. And that is the building of an observatory on Mount Adams. It was the first observatory north or east of the Allegheny Mountains, and was built by a gentleman by the name of Ormsby McKnight Mitchell, who grew up in northern Kentucky and eventually ended up at West Point as a student and then taught there for a while, got bored there, came back to Cincinnati, eventually landed on the faculty of Cincinnati College. And began to teach mathematics, physics, and astronomy. People got very interested in astronomy around those times and asked Mitchell if he would be willing to raise money and build an observatory. And Mitchell, of course, said yes. They raised about 10 grand. He went to Europe, bought a telescope, came back, said, now I got to build a place to put the telescope. And I got a problem. I've got no money. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get some free land from a gentleman by the name of Nicholas Longworth. That's a whole nother story. And I'm also going to try to create some buzz. And that buzz is going to be generated by John Quincy Adams if he agrees to come to Cincinnati for this cornerstone laying for their observatory. So Mitchell contacted Adams. Adams said, but of course, I'll be there. Why Adams? Adams tried to get Congress to pass legislation for an observatory when he was president, and it didn't happen. So he had a very strong interest in astronomy. So Adams came here and laid the cornerstone for the observatory on November 8th, 1843. People were so amazed and so impressed with him. He was 76 years old, traveled from the East Coast, took him 12 days. And they said, you know, we got to do something to honor his gumption and his interest. So we're going to change the name of Mount Ida to Mount Adams. And that's how Mount Adams got its name.
It's so fascinating. We're talking with Jim Steiner. He is the author of Mount Adams, A History. And you're also the author of a book from about a decade ago that explores some of the, well, Immaculata, right? One of the churches that's on there. And these churches that are on Mount Adams play a significant role in its history and its development. And I think people probably think of Immaculata during a very particular time of year for a tradition that takes place there that draws a lot of our attention. How significant was religion in the development of this neighborhood?
Very, very significant. Mount Adams was referred to as the Holy Hill. And because there were several churches up here, the first one was built in 1860 by John Purcell, and that was the Immaculata Church. It's commonly called Immaculata, but its official name is Church of the Immaculate Conception. Purcell built that church for the German-speaking people, but of course there were Irish people up here, and they didn't speak German, so they went to church there, but felt, I'm a second-class citizen here. So there was a decision made to build an Irish church, and that was the Holy Cross Church, which opened in 1871. And finally, both churches coexisted until probably 1971, when Holy Cross Church closed. It closed because there were not enough people to support two churches. But those two churches had a significant impact on Mount Adams because they were German Catholic churches or Irish Catholic churches. And each family, blue-collar family, had 8 to 10 kids and lived on one floor of a shotgun house. So that contributed to the population of Mount Adams, which the largest number of people on Mount Adams was in 1910 when there were about 11,000 souls. Today it's about 1,500 to 1,600.
Jim, throughout the book, we're introduced to a lot of people from local history. You've already referenced Nicholas Longworth, and obviously he has his hands in a lot of Cincinnati history. But we get to know a lot of other figures more intimately for their work on Mount Adams. You do explore a lot of these people within their within a special chapter here in the book. I'm wondering if the contributions of any singular individual stand out for the Mount Adams that we know today.
You know, that's a tough one, Michael. I don't think I have a very good answer for that right off the top of my head. I've never really thought about that. You know, one of the people that is featured in the book is a guy by the name of Neil Bortz. And Neil is the president emeritus of Town Properties. And if anyone had a significant impact on Mount Adams from the 60s onward to today, it was Neil, because he saved a lot of buildings on the hill, and it's not without he's not without people who aren't real big supporters, because he bought a lot of houses and raised rents and people had to move out. But still, he was a big influencer on Mount Adams. And I would say also Mariah Longworth Storer, who was Nicholas Longworth's granddaughter, had a big influence on the hill too. She founded Rookwood Pottery, which was the only woman-owned business in Cincinnati that was known internationally. And Rookwood Pottery was a big draw to Mount Adams, and it eventually closed, but now has been resurrected and is doing business in over the Rhine as Rookwood Pottery. So Mariah would be happy that that had happened, but she had a big influence on the hill too. And of course, I think John Purcell, the Archbishop, was a big influencer too, because he was responsible for the two churches that were built up here.
And I think more recently, people might remember David Crowley, the Cincinnati City Councilman, who had a big personality and a big personal involvement in Mount Adams, I should say. Talk about his lasting impact.
Dave was grew up on the hill, and he did a lot of traveling, got a master's in social work, and did a lot of kind of jobs related to not getting paid a lot of money, but doing a lot of good socially. And he traveled the world, but he had a big influence on Mount Adams when his family business, Crowley's Highland House Cafe, his brother was running it, and he passed away. And Dave dropped everything he was doing, came back to Cincinnati, and took over Crowley's and managed it for a number of years until he decided to run for political office. And he did, and he was successful in his first attempt at becoming a council member in Cincinnati. And he continued to be a council member and was eventually appointed vice mayor by Mark Mallory. He passed away a couple of years ago, but the business, Crowley's Highland House Cafe, is still very profitable today and very active, and is still run by the family. It's currently run by Lainey Smith, who is a Crowley, and she succeeded Jerry Crowley, who just really recently stepped down as the manager of Crowley's. Crowley's is a real neighborhood gathering spot for Mount Adams people who like to get together and tell lies, and I'm a big member of that group.
And we're talking with Jim Steiner, author of Mount Adams, A History, a new book. And before I let you run, Jim, I have to talk about a couple of these strange references to historic figures that have apparently very small local connections, but certainly worthy of exploration. Janis Joplin had a concert canceled in Dayton, I read in your book, and made her way to your neck of the woods.
She did. Just sort of appeared. WEBN was doing Summer Fair in Eden Park. And there were a lot of bands that were playing, and Janis had nothing to do. So somehow or another, she heard about it and appeared in Eden Park and walked around and just created a lot of stir and admiration. And some stories even say that she performed with one of the bands. I wasn't able to completely document that, but I just thought it was an interesting sidebar to all the stuff that goes on in Mount Adams. It was a real hippie magnet back in those days, and I think that attracted Janis too.
Well, tell me about Charles Manson and his alleged connections to Mount Adams. I understand that this claim may be disputed.
This is a very disputed claim. The official biography of Mr. Manson has no tie to Mount Adams, but there are people who live on the hill or lived on the hill at the time would absolutely swear that he lived here, and they described him to a T. They also, the owner of the City View Tavern told me this story about Mr. Manson. Mr. Manson lived on Oregon Street, just down from City View Tavern, and for some reason or other, City View Tavern became his favorite watering spot. So he would go there frequently, and he was a tequila drinker. And he would get in his cups with tequila. And one night he decided he was going to fly off the back porch of the City View Tavern, which is several stories above ground level. And he could have messed himself up pretty well. But the owner of the place, a guy by the name of Lagerman, pulled him off the back porch and told everybody in the place, you know, Charlie's a good guy. It's the tequila. So we're not going to serve tequila anymore. And you can go in the City View Tavern to this very day and order a shot of tequila, and they'll say, you know, we don't serve it. And some of the people that work there know why, and some don't. But that's the story. And there are a number of Mount Adams people who were kids at the time and described Charlie walking around the hill in sandals and robes with a beard and these maniacal eyes. And it's hard not to believe them.
Well, what do you think is going to surprise people the most as they flip the pages of this book?
Well, if you're a true history, Cincinnati history buff, and know about Mount Adams and Nicholas Longworth, the dogma of vineyards on Mount Adams is pretty common. Mount Adams is described as being covered with vineyards, and I could not document that. I was able to locate what I thought might be a couple of them, but we were never able to firm it up. That's one thing. The other major takeaway for me from this is, again, goes back to how we started this conversation, people's love for the hill. You go through time after time old Inquirer articles, and they say, I just love this place. And it kind of reinforced it for me. So, again, we'll end on Mount Adams. The book is a love story.
Well, way to tie it all up into a nice bow here. Jim Steiner, author of Mount Adams, A History. Proceeds from the sales of this book will be donated to the Mount Adams Civic Association. The book is available now. We've got a link at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab to find out more about it. Jim, thank you so much for sharing the work with us and sharing some time with us today. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Michael.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.